This podfic contains adult material of a sexual and graphic nature. Listener discretion is advised, and be mindful of the tags. Feel free to hop out of the back seat if that's not your thing. Dean won't hold it against you. More than likely, he or Sam or some other SBN character or any number of character combinations will be too busy holding other things against others to give it a second thought. If you've buckled up and are ready for the drive, please check your Bluetooth connections and/or plug in those headphones before the engine starts. By proceeding, you understand that idling in the Impala is not responsible for any embarrassment, cringe, or adverse consequences that may occur as a result of the listener failing to conduct these checks. Black Valentine by Crowley's Mistress. Rating is mature. No archive warnings apply. Category is female male. Fandom is supernatural. Relationship, Kara Roberts / Sam Winchester. Characters, Sam Winchester, Kara Roberts, supernatural, Dean Winchester, Lucifer, supernatural, Castiel, supernatural. Original characters. Additional tags. Valentine's Day. Sam Winchester has trauma from Lucifer's cage. Lucifer loves Sam Winchester. Samifer, freeform. Implied, referenced, dubious consent. Emotional, psychological abuse. Past sexual abuse. Sam Winchester gives oral sex. Vaginal sex. Episode, Season 4. Episode 14, Sex and Violence, Supernatural. Mentioned, Becky Rosen. Lucifer in the Cage, Supernatural. The Black Grimoire Spellbook, Supernatural. Summary. Can a chance meetup 5 years later with Dr. Kara Roberts be a repeat of their first night? Good, lusty fun? Or could it be part of a larger scheme used by Lucifer to demonstrate that even from the depths of hell, away in the cage, he will spoil and give gifts to Sam on special days, such as Valentine's. As Sam navigates his trauma and tries to decide for himself what he wants. Notes. Written for the 2025 Valentine's Day Writing Challenge. SPN Fanfic Pond. Trigger warning. For past implied SA memories in the paragraph that starts, his memories were hazy. Story gets a lot later after that scene. The first time it happened, there was a small inkling in the back of his mind that maybe, maybe, it was him. It was right after his wedding to Becky, and there wasn't anything special or threatening. It was just a picture frame. An empty picture frame. No note. No return sender. Nothing. They both knew enough people that were acquaintances yet not close friends who could have sent it. It wasn't like he was married to Becky long enough to actually worry about even taking a picture to put in it. 3 months later, for Valentine's 2012, there was no doubt. Even with no note, no return sender. The motel manager had called and thankfully he answered since Dean was out on his annual unattached drifter Christmas hunt.
Hey, Winchester?
Hmm? Sam immediately, wary, thinking back to what name they used to register.
You got a package at reception.
Sam's hackles were fully alert. He grabbed a silver knife, a gun, salt, and headed over to reception. He walked around the building first and didn't find anything out of place. When he walked into the reception area, a noisy air conditioner was making a valiant effort to cool the area, and harsh yellow bulbs hid nothing from scrutiny. The manager seemed engrossed in some files and only gave him the briefest of glances.
You have a package for me?
The man pointed with his chewed-out pen to the corner of the counter to a beautiful basket arrangement. Sam looked through the shrink wrap and saw the fig butter occupying the prominent spot with figs, Unjeer milk, and other related products surrounding it, and felt his stomach drop.
Who brought this in?
Sam asked as he pulled out his knife. Instantly on guard. The manager seemed unfazed.
Some delivery guy. It's Valentine's. He was busy.
Do you have cameras?
Do you have a warrant?
Sam pulled out his wallet.
Signed by Grant? Try Franklin.
Sam cocked an eyebrow but slid over the money, and the guy waved him over to the back room. The video was a bust. There was nothing on it that pointed to demon possession or gave any clues. But Sam knew. He told the manager to keep the basket. There was no way he would be able to explain that to Dean, and the mere thought of figs nauseated him. He went back to the room. He puked. His memories were hazy, but Lucifer had gone on and on about the fruit of heaven.
You are heaven.
The wasps and their reproduction methods, crawling through a narrow passage and sting to die.
I'll crawl into you.
Being eaten after reproduction.
Our juices intermingle.
Their home being the place they died.
You're my home.
A general sense of claustrophobia. The wasps chewing a tunnel out for the pregnant sisters to leave.
Even if you chew your way out, you won't escape.
Lucifer saying they'd make do until they could get their hands on the good stuff.
I'll make it enjoyable.
Sam couldn't think about it. Could not. The figs. The wasps. The obligated mutualism. The conversations. How did Lucifer send him that? Was he out of the cage? The memories were sharper now. He needed to warm up because he could feel the icy touches as he remembered more and more about figs. Dean found him hyperventilating next to the heater, set at the maximum of 90 degrees, with the quilts from both beds around his shoulders and dry heaving into a wastebasket. The next day they left that motel, each hungover in their own way, sun bright and glistening on snow that had melted a few days ago and now was just dirty ice. Neither spoke, both ashamed of their performance the prior night, allowing Baby to cocoon them safely and put miles between their most recent nightmare. In May, they are on a case in Portland, Oregon, and a demon gives him a note, like a kid in class, but mid-fight. Message from the boss. Then an uppercut. He'd have thought it was just trash talk, but he had seen the sleight of hand and the slip of paper. They'd fought and dispatched the demon, and Sam had waited over half an hour before excusing himself to go to the bathroom. Dark Star Grimoires. Sam Googled it. It was a bookstore, not too far from where they were.
Hey, you hungry? We should grab a bite to eat and hit some bookstores.
He caught Dean's half nod and quizzical look.
Seriously, dude? Does this work? Food and books? Look at me, the hot nerd. Let's get it on.
Sam chuckled, then shrugged. Portland is home to some very renowned bookstores. Powell's is like 5 stories and has been around like 100 years. Darkstar has grimoires from the 1600s. I mean, they are both worthy of spending hours at.
Okay, pick one of them and no more than 1 hour and we eat first.
Dean huffed.
That's going to be hard. The fantasy section at Powell's is a whole floor. We're going to the other one, the one we can use for cases and work, okay?
Sam smiled. His brother was so easy. He shrugged his shoulders.
Sounds good.
The Dark Star Grimoire bookstore was very small. Dean shot him a questioning look, but Sam tapped the lower right corner where there was a sticker for witches and another for Luciferians, and Dean sobered up. It would make it a bit harder for Sam, but he needn't have worried. The owner, who was also the attendant, pulled a packaged order out and set it next to the register.
Hey, Dean, can you get me a green smoothie from next door? They smell good. Cut grass does it for you?
Sam bitch-faced him, and Dean raised his palms in an okay-okay gesture. Dean hadn't even stepped out of the bookstore when the man slid the package towards him. Sam pulled it out of the bag and saw that it was Essential Enochian, a practical grimoire to the angel magic of Dr. John Dee's Enochian Tables. Sam trembled. He looked at the man. He was a large man with a bushy beard, small eyeglasses, and runic tattoos. He
He was wearing a kilt and a t-shirt with a goat head on it.
Did someone come in and pay for this?
The man just shook his head.
How do you know it's for me?
The liege lord told me.
Have you seen him? In person?
Sam whispered, stepping closer. The man must have thought they were in cahoots.
No, sir. He's still entrapped. But his faithful demons serve as couriers. He's getting much done.
The bell behind them rings as Dean steps into the small store. The man pushes the book toward Sam.
Happy anniversary.
Sam grabs the book and turns around, brushing against Dean as he scoots quickly out of the store. They are an hour north, passing Cowlitz territory in a fancy Indian casino, the green smoothie untouched, but all watery and separated into layers, when Dean finally asks,
"So, ready to share with the class if you found what you were looking for?"
"What you mean?" Sam glances at him sideways.
"Well, we went to a hole in a wall bookstore instead of a bookstore with a whole floor of nerd books. The owner was a devil-worshipping, pipe-blowing outlander wannabe that you kicked me out to talk to privately. I'm supposing about, I don't know, let me guess, Lucifer? Based on the little Enochian handbook here? So, if something is going down with the devil, if he is out of the cage, if he's planning a breakout or something, I need to know."
Sam feels his ears burn red. He thought he was so slick and careful, and here Dean put everything together in a few minutes. He bites his nails and slumps his shoulders inwards. He is silent for a long while, but eventually decides that it is best to let Dean in.
"Lucifer is still in the cage. I'm sure he's plotting to get out. He has nothing else to do. But he doesn't do that with me. With me, he..."
Sam swallows. This is harder than he expected.
"Sammy.
He likes to send me gifts." Sam laughs a bit maniacally.
"Asshole. Never did learn the theory of love languages is that you gift in the mode the other person likes, not in the mode you like." "So, what is that? A late birthday present?"
Dean asks. Sam lets out a long sigh until it seems he won't have any breath left in his body. Then he shakes his head.
"Today's May 13th.
Sam clenches and unclenches his fists several times. Dean can see his brother's hazel eyes are full of tears. He thinks back to something he thought he heard at the store but dismissed. Suddenly, realization hits him like a train wreck.
"Motherfucker."
He punches the steering wheel, making the car veer slightly off course.
"Dean."
Sam cries out. Maybe it is a warning because of the driving. Perhaps it is because of his temperament. Either way, Dean grips the steering wheel tightly and breathes deeply.
"You know that's bullshit. It's not..."
He won't say it. Won't give Lucifer the power of calling it an anniversary.
"Isn't it, though?"
Sam answers quietly.
"That book expensive?"
"Probably."
"I wish we could wait and give it to Bobby, but..."
Sam nods, understanding immediately, and rolls down his window. Dean merges into the shoulder and Sam lets it drop into the moss-covered section where road and forest seem to meet.
"When did this start?"
Sam shrugs.
"Last year, I think. A bit before." "Sam."
Dean's voice is hurt.
"You have to tell me these things. I can't help you if you don't tell me. Is this what happened on Valentine's?"
Sam's eyes glaze over as he nods.
"I'll tell you."
The following Valentine, they had just moved into the bunker 2 weeks prior, and Dean had been going into town to their postal box every day. It was the first time they were purchasing home things like bath mats. The bunker had everything, but many things they agreed they wanted the 2013 version versus the 1950 version, like a modern coffee maker. That evening, Dean had gone out to hit the bars and do his community service for the local singles. Sam decided to open the packages and sort them and break down the recycling. A frother, a sponge holder, an anti-slip mat for the shower. Three of them because there were three showers. He found it funny that his brother would think of this, and then bedsheets. Sam dropped the package. He pushed away from the table and left all the packages in the middle of it. They had started calling it the War Room table because it lit up and had the countries embedded. He walked down the hallways, counting all 32 rooms. He didn't want to ruin Dean's evening of fun. He could put them in a bag and not look at them. It wasn't so bad. Not like they were on his bed. He went back to the mail and packages, grabbed the bed sheets, and put them in a bag. He wrote on the outside, a gift. He knew Dean would understand. At least, he hoped he would. Sam didn't think he would be able to sleep after seeing that. At least not on his own. He decided to take a sleeping pill. He texted Dean.
Hey, left something for you to handle in the war room. Took a sleeping pill, so talk tomorrow.
As he lay waiting for the sleeping pill to kick in, he started to doubt the intelligence of his actions. He had rendered himself powerless, in a new place when he was basically alone and sent that information over text to his brother. Who knew who could intercept the message, especially on a night when Dean was out getting wasted and meeting people? Yes, the bunker was warded and a bit out of the way, but that could be beneficial for a supernatural entity, keeping out other entities and human folk unaware. Last he knew, Lucifer was still in the cage, but that was months ago. What if he was out now? Shit, maybe he should put the red sheets on his bed. That way at least Lucifer wouldn't be angry that he'd rejected his gift.
You hurt my feelings, Pumpkin.
Sam hated those red sheets, satiny, soft, slippery, his body sliding all over them, and they were always cold.
Red is hot.
How did Lucifer know his bed was a double? He probably watched him, was watching him right now. Sam could feel him.
I'll always watch over you.
Yeah, Sam was going to put the new sheets on.
You want me.
As soon as he could get his head to not weigh so much. The next morning, Sam woke up later than usual. He wandered out of his room, down the hallway, and after a quick stop in the bathroom, meandered into the kitchen. Dean was eating a full breakfast.
Hey, Sleeping Beauty. I thought I was the one with the hangover.
Dean smiled at him as he stood up and went to serve him some pancakes from the griddle and some fruit.
Bacon is real, so no, right?
No. Thanks. Dean placed the plate in front of Sam. You get lucky?
Of course I did. It was Valentine's.
Dean smirked as he sat down.
Awfully nice, too. She's a chiropractor, and she adjusted me this morning. I'm sure she did.
Sam half-heartedly tried to joke.
Sammy, we're maturing now. Let's be serious. So what'd you take? It really knocked you out.
A sleeping pill from the infirmary.
Oh. No wonder you tripping balls. That medicine is all expired. It's a miracle you didn't get any hallucinations.
Sam just made a non-committal noise as he thought of the terrifying dreams he'd had, or rather, acute memories, last night.
Well, it knocked me out. Did you handle the bag? Yep.
Dean looked at him as if expecting more, an explanation perhaps. Sam ate his breakfast. He had no intention of explaining that those sheets were the same as the ones on the bed he shared with Lucifer in the cage. It wasn't like that was even real, anyways. Soon after his birthday, Sam started getting anxious. He would refuse to go into stores, told Dean to not order anything, and was generally avoiding anything that could lead to a gift being sprung on him. He was isolating and staying home more often. He was still outsmarted. One day, Cass came to the bunker with a chess set to play with him. He set it up in the library, delighted with the shapes, and went for the hunter.
Sam, come. I have a surprise for you.
He presented the chess set with a smile and a small flourish.
Isn't it beautiful?
Who gave you that? Sam asked between clenched teeth. Eyeing the small pawns, one row of demons and one row of angels. The kings, an archangel, and a devil.
One of my brothers.
Castiel answered with his signature confused look, stepping back and trying to understand what could possibly be wrong with these pieces of stone.
A Michael loyalist, by any chance?
Sam sounded angry. Castiel reeled through his memories trying to figure out what this meant. Sam started to shiver. He grabbed the archangel piece.
Which of your brothers do you think this represents?
Sam yelled.
Michael?
Castiel asked, confused. He only chose to say Michael because Sam mentioned the loyalists.
Look at how pretty he is.
Sam shrieks as he throws the piece at Cass straight in his face and turns around and stalks off towards the dorms. Dean is coming in from his room, summoned by the commotion.
Sam?
Sam zips past him, hell-bent on making it to the safety of his room. Dean wanders up to the library level and finds Cass there with the chessboard.
Is this what has Sammy all in a tizzy?
Yes, I'm afraid it is. However, I don't know exactly why.
Dean touches the pieces.
Angels and demons, huh? Your angel brother. The one who commands demons, like to play chess with Sam. One of the more pleasant activities they did together. Between torture sessions, you know. Don't think I've seen Sam play chess in the 3 years he's been back. Pity. Because as a kid, he was a real nerd. Went to competitions and everything. Oh, Dean. I'm sorry. I didn't know.
Cass looks regretful.
Well, now you do. Get rid of it.
Dean strides off. He'll stop by Sam's room and see if the kid needs help, water, or snacks. By now, Valentine's has a bitter taste. So much that, come January, when everything is being decorated in red, Sam starts to feel a tug at his stomach. The knowledge that he will be expecting something to come. For Lucifer to extend his reach from the bowels of hell and to brush his skin and affect his life. He almost can't control the dread. Why can't he be a normal boyfriend and send flowers or chocolate? No, Lucifer needs to make everything a statement. The anxiety is turning him into a wreck.
Sam, this isn't healthy. You hardly have eaten. What are you going to do? Dope up and sleep until it's over? That's not life.
It's better than staying up, worrying about what's to come.
Come on, come to the bar with me. I'll be there and protect you. It'll be fun, and you gotta eat.
Dean, I'll cramp your style. How are you going to get laid if you have me hanging on you all night?
Oh, trust me. I'll make it work. Might even get some because of you.
Dean giggles.
Slash chicks are a wild beast.
Finally, because he can't go through the pain of the hallucination and dreams he went through last year, and he doesn't want to do it alone, he says yes. He'll go along.
Aren't you going to dress up a little? A splash of cologne? Some of that conditioner stuff you put in your hair?
Dean asks when he shows up to the garage in jeans and a pullover.
Dean, I'm not looking to get laid. I just don't want to be here. If I'm going to cramp your style, I can stay or go to a movie.
Sam starts backing up to go back into the bunker.
Nah, buddy, come on. You could look like a hobo and still have chicks throwing themselves at you on a regular day. Today, double that.
Dean smiles.
Let's go.
They hop into the Impala. Dean is in an exceedingly good mood, bopping along to the music. They go to a bar on the other side of town, a decidedly more upscale area. Now Sam understands why Dean's last conquest was a chiropractor and why he stayed the night at her place. It was probably a very comfortable place, and although Dean doesn't admit it, he likes creature comforts. This last year, living in the bunker has been a rebirth for Dean. He's been able to settle in, decorate his space, try new gadgets and hobbies. He cooks, he sews, and not just stitches from fights. And he fiddles with new gadgets, security cameras, coffee makers, light dimmers, timers, voice-to-text transcription and speakers, recessed in, under the table, in a corner, automatic, voice activated, music flowing in every room easily to Dean's pure delight. The bunker has been his first real home, and Sam loves what it means for his brother. For him, it hasn't been quite the same. He loves the insane amount of resources, the library, the historic archives the men of letters have accumulated, and the magical artifacts. He loves that this is their legacy. But they have only been there a year, and to be honest, that Lucifer was able to breach his feeling of safety so close to when they moved in has left him feeling like he can't really get comfortable. Plus, and this is something he's never told Dean, he lived so long in the cage that getting to live anywhere else a significant amount of time is a laughable exercise in futility. It will take so long before he thinks it is actually enough time. Before he thinks, okay, I'll be here a while. Let's decorate a bit.
Okay, Sammy. If I point at you, look sad.
I thought I already did.
Yeah, but fuckable sad, not miserable drowned cat sad.
Sam nods as if this all makes perfect sense. Apparently it does, because Dean excitedly goes,
"Yes, perfect."
They go inside, and yes, it is a nicer bar than their usual haunts, but it is still a bar. Better lit, definitely cleaner, less noisy. The clientele is better dressed. The tables have cocktails and appetizers. But the hungry eyes, the typical sleazeball, the rowdy group, the bored bartender, the one that comes every night, the couple out for a special date, all the typical players. Dean identifies the friend group and chooses a highboy, kitty corner from them, easy to look at and to be seen.
Oof, that blonde is giving me fuck me eyes already.
Dean smacks Sam on the chest.
Yeah? Well, she'll be face down on the floor in about an hour. She's smashed. Tried designate a driver. Quiet, but has a naughty girl smirk.
But Sam says he looks down at the menu.
Good eye. You don't want that one yourself? Redhead. That's spicy.
Dean pops his lips.
No, I definitely did not come to hook up. Sammy, you should live a little.
Dean smiles at the designated driver chick, who hides her smile by looking away.
No, she's gonna make me chase her.
Yeah, well, she isn't drunk. Sam waves over a waitress. They order some ales, an order of cheese pork fries for Dean, some garbanzo fritters with tzatziki sauce for Sam, and a round of drinks for the girls' table. The blonde comes over to say, "Thank you." Sam sacrifices himself by flirting with her. Her name is Stacy, with an I, and Sam lets her know that his brother is really interested in the redhead. She is momentarily confused, because despite Sam being tall and obviously there, it seems like she hadn't seen him. Sam understands. He works hard at trying to disappear, so seeing that he has managed to actually succeed is a bit rewarding. She tries to focus her eyes and notices that this guy, Tom? Sam? Yeah, he is super tall, and that's good, and she lays a hand on his chest. He seems to tense up, but doesn't do anything. And under her hand, she can tell the dude is ripped. Okay, she can deal with the tall one and give Mindy Goody Two-Shoes the short one. He was a looker, but whatever. This one is tall like a basketball player. She's always wanted to fuck a ball player. You play ball? He shakes his head. Ooh, nice hair. She stretches her hand to touch it, and he grabs her hand. Must be a romantic.
Gonna introduce us to your friends?
He says, keeping her hand down at her side. Oh, yeah, come on. She slurs her words as she pulls Sam's hand. Sam and his friend go to their table, and soon Dean and the redhead are deep in conversation, flirting mode. The blonde tries to flirt with him again. He smiles weakly and feigns interest. As soon as it's safe to do so, he excuses himself to go make an important call. Dean tells the blonde that she probably reminds him too much of his dead ex, a blonde too, and he couldn't handle it. The girls are all in town for a convention and are headed back. They had rented a van, and Mindy, the redhead, is in fact the designated driver. She invites Dean to go get a nightcap with her.
After she delivers her friends, she can imbibe a little, let go a lot. Dean accepts.
Sam, I'm going to go back with Mindy to where she's staying. Take baby, and we'll talk tomorrow. Maybe pick me up, or maybe I'll catch a cab.
Dean quickly confers with his brother. Sam figures it is pretty late, and by now, whatever Lucifer may have been planning would be done. Besides, it's not like he's going to cramp Dean's style. Also, he really doesn't want to go back to the bunker alone.
How about I follow behind and park in the garage? And when you finish, text me. And then we leave?
You'd do that?
It's not like the first time I've waited around while you fuck.
Dude, well, okay. I'll go on baby then. Because going in a van with drunk chicks would suck.
Sam chuckles.
What? The blonde feeling you up isn't your idea of foreplay?
I was going for that first. Thank you for saving me.
Dean, wide-eyed, pretends to wipe his brow. Sam mock bows. Dean talks to Mindy and they set out towards the hotel following the girl's minivan comfortably in the Impala. When they get to the hotel, Sam tells Dean he will stay in the garage a while, because if not, Stacy, with an I, will think he wants a nightcap too.
I mean, you totally could.
Dude, weren't you just saying thanks for saving you from that?
I mean, yeah, but if you got nothing else going on, who's gonna know? Unattached Drifter Christmas. You are unattached. She's the drifter, and you both get a present.
You are disgusting. Go before I decide to ruin your hookup.
Okay, so if I see Stacy, just tell her you're parked here, waiting for her. Got it.
Dean laughs mischievously as he jumps out of the car, pocketing the keys. Sam can't help but smile as he watches his brother head off. He pulls out the novel he's reading, The Martian, by Andy Weir. He likes this author. He mixes science so intuitively with humor. After about half an hour, Sam's eyes are straining because the small interior light is frankly too dim to be used as a reading light. Sam figures that by now all the girlfriends, particularly Stacy, should be face-planted in their beds. It should be safe to go read in the lobby for a while. He grabs his laptop bag, water bottle, and book, and heads inside. He's settled in at a small table, laptop open, book over the keyboard, and happily immersed for almost an hour when he hears a shy, "Agent Styles?" He looks up, tearing himself away from the harsh terrain of Mars, allowing his eyes to focus on the woman in front of him. His brain runs quickly through the last few months, but it's her mouth, the way it's set.
"Dr. Roberts, hey, nice to see you."
Sam stands and offers her a quick and awkward hug. She laughs nervously. "You look different." Now it's his turn to laugh awkwardly.
"Well, next time Dean tells me I should make more of an effort dressing up, I think I'll pay attention."
"Oh God, no, I didn't mean it like that." She covers her face as she laughs.
"But you kind of did, though."
He wags his finger at her as he smiles a full kilowatt smile. "In my defense, I only met you suited up, you know, in all your Fed glory. You still doing that?"
"Yes, but you caught me off hours. So, you know, in my regular guy who doesn't know how to dress, state of non-glory."
Sam banters back. That's hogwash, because Dean, is that the same guy that was your partner back then?" Sam nods. "Dean knew you could and should dress better. Almost like he was expecting you to meet women or something. Let me guess, at a bar on Valentine's Day?" Sam nods shamefully.
"You got us pegged."
"So why are you here?" She leans over and looks at his book. "Reading sci-fi instead of the bar."
"Oh, this?"
Sam points vaguely at the hotel bar.
"Wasn't the bar."
Sam air quotes.
"It's the nightcap place."
"So, further evidence one might say that your partner does indeed know how to dress." She flips her hair and smiles mischievously.
"I am so glad he is otherwise engaged, because the roasting I'd get if you two teamed up would be worthy of Comedy Central."
Sam's eyes twinkle. They stare at each other for a minute.
She bites her lip, and he remembers she did that the evening they spent together. She must be remembering, too, because she says, "So," her tone dripping with invitation and their history unfolding in both their memories. How that word had catapulted them to, frankly, one of the best encounters either had ever had. Sam blushes and hangs his head, blood rushing not just to his cheeks, although he discreetly changes his stance. After a minute or two, Sam shakes his head.
"Listen, I didn't go out with the intention of hooking up. Hence,"
he points at his clothes, "the little to no effort." "Well, lucky for you that I've seen the upgraded version and tasted the goods. I'd be willing to do a nightcap with you despite the atrocious clothing." Kara takes a step closer. Sam inhales her. He glances down and sees her look up at him through her eyelashes and can feel her body heat ghosting against him, but not touching him yet. She smiles. He smiles thinly.
"Yeah, but thing is, that night, good as it was, because it was good. So good."
His hand lightly brushes her arm.
"It was also out of character for me. I don't do the hookups, the one-night stands, you know."
"So, what I'm hearing, Agent Styles, is that I'm a special case?" She takes a small step, almost a shuffle forward, firmly slotting her legs in between Sam's. Sam lets out a small laugh that sounds like he swallowed a yelp or bit his tongue. He is smiling wide, small teeth showing. He bites his lip, the set of his jaw clenching and looking even more square. She can feel the wiry muscles of his legs, and although he has obviously lost weight in the 5 years since they've last seen each other, he hasn't lost his strength or athletic build. Last time he was juiced up, now he is sleeker, but he's still going to be able to carry her. She feels excitement pooling in her lower belly already. She can feel his excitement starting as well. Then he steps back, breaks contact between their bodies, and sits in the chair he was in when she first saw him.
"You are, Dr. Roberts. You are a special case, and will forever be an amazing memory. But I'm not doing nightcaps."
His tone sounds clipped. He begins to pack his things. Normally, when a person is rejected that bluntly, they would hightail it and make their excuses to leave as quickly as possible. The human ego tends to be a frail thing. However, Kara didn't leave or pout or seem off-put. She nods and puts a hand on Sam's back, which makes him flinch in surprise. "Hey, sorry. I thought you were into it." "I took our past as a guarantee that it could happen again," Kara explains. "And that's messed up. I know that's not how it works. If roles were reversed, I'd be clearer. So, sorry." Sam twists in his chair and sees understanding in those brown pools that a few minutes ago were filled with passion. He exhales audibly and nods with a short jutting of the chin. "Want to talk about it?" Kara offers.
"No, most definitely not."
Sam scoffs, but then adds unprompted,
"I got out of the most torturous and abusive relationship. It only lasted 16 months, but felt like centuries. They've been stalking and sending me presents on special occasion days like today, Christmas, our anniversary. So these are just the worst days, you know."
Sam sees Kara's expression of surprise and hurries to backtrack.
"I'm sorry, I shouldn't have dumped that on you. I've been on edge today, that's all."
"No, no, of course not. Hey, I offered to listen," she jokes. "It's surprising. Although we always hear anyone can be a victim, you never really believe a big, strong guy like you would be." Sam offers a non-committal grunt. He doesn't want to continue this conversation with her. He has finished packing his laptop, book, and water bottle. He turns towards her, a bit surprised she is standing so close.
"Well, I'm gonna go. Catch a few winks of sleep before my partner returns. It was so lovely to see you again, and see that you're doing well."
Sam says as he slings his bag over his shoulder, slightly bumping into Kara as he does. "Are you really?" She stays in the same place.
"What?"
Sam asks, uncomfortable.
Catch a few winks?
You said you'd been on edge. Now you brought up an unpleasant subject. I think you'll probably go and stress about it for a while. Certainly not relax.
She puts a hand on his chest.
How about we do something that really allows you to take the edge off?
Her fingers tug at the collar of his shirt, reminiscent of their first time when she pulled his tie off.
Sam stills. He chews on his lip. There are a million thoughts going through his head. Dr. Kara Roberts was the last person he had sex with where he was unaffected, and it was voluntary and good. Well, not unaffected. He was drinking demon blood back then. But he chose to have sex with her because he wanted to, and she had nothing to do with demons or Lucifer. And it was good, fun, and lusty. After her, it was Ruby, Lilith, Lucifer, a whole bunch of soulless sex. Maybe Becky, too, although she said they didn't. She still perved on him, and the fact he couldn't remember was enough to set his teeth on edge. Plus, he had been tied up and naked from the waist down, so not great for her story. Ugh, he doesn't want to think about that. Fact is, it's been years since sex has been fun. Last time it was with this woman who, within the last 15 minutes, has proven she can be funny, witty, smart, compassionate, and yes, still get him going. This could be good. This could be safe. Sam nods. He has made up his mind. Worked it all out in his head. So. He looks down at her. Smiles. She smiles back at him, understanding. My room? Sam encircles her waist and lowers his head, letting his mouth brush lightly over hers. Sounds like a fabulous idea. His words spill directly into her mouth. He feels as she has a full body shiver and chuckles. Yeah, they have good chemistry together. They walk hand in hand to the elevator, and before it is even closed, they are kissing. He has pushed her against the back panel and has her jaws in his hands, engulfing her head in his hands, his leg bent and positioned between both her legs, and she's basically on her tiptoes, riding his knee as she kisses him. He can see her reflection on both sides and on top of them and behind them, and it's intoxicating. He is kissing her again and again and again and again. Everywhere he looks, she is there, and he possesses her lips, her face, her tongue. And she smiles and bites and nips and pushes back against his mouth and licks. And there are more of her, and each one of them loves to kiss him, and they do so with comfort and passion, but none hurt him. Sam loves it. He can kiss her forever. Or for 40 seconds while the elevator arrives. She giggles and grabs his hand and leads him out of the elevator. They leave the other kissing couples in the mirror. At the door, she fumbles with the door key as Sam presses into her. No fair. He presses a kiss into the side of her neck and grabs her hips. What's not fair? He jokes, moving her hips side to side over his groin area.
Something making you uncoordinated?
Agent? She laughs as she finally gets the green button and pushes the handle of the door down. We will have to establish some rules of engagement. She steps into the narrow hallway of the room, slips off her heels, and turns towards Sam, who still has his hands on her hips. She leans her body into his, melding their chests, her lips closing into the shell of his ear. How coordinated would you be without, let's say, your hands? She places one hand over each of Sam's and pushes them away from her body. Now, take off my blouse. Let's see what's fair. She kisses Sam. Sam laughs nervously. His hands lay inertly at his sides, and he is trying his best to kiss Kara back and not go into full-blown panic attack. He was stupid. Stupid to think he could go out and have sex like any regular Joe. Of course not. He's messed up. He literally wants to slap himself, maybe go to the bathroom and vomit. She was being cute and flirtatious when she moved his hands, and he is trying not to spiral into memories of the cage. He feels her acrylic nails scrape the nape of his neck and a slight pressure. He obeys the cue and finds his face in her bosom. The shirt, agent.
He nods and starts to work the buttons with his teeth. He soon finds that biting them off is the most effective way to get them off. Kara laughs. Sam is serious.
You really are a focused worker. Can't say I am thrilled I won't be able to wear it tomorrow, but I didn't say it had to be salvageable, so I think you deserve a reward for a job well done.
Kara presses against him and goes to kiss him again, but finds that Sam turns away.
Styles?
I didn't think this through.
Sam takes a small step back.
I don't look like before.
He looks down.
It's not just ugly clothes. My skin.
He shakes his head.
I'm sorry.
So, you're just leaving me here, like this?
She asks. He pushes his bangs back and sighs.
I could, you know, eat you out, so it's not a waste of your time. I really didn't mean to work you up. I'm sorry.
Sam, that's not what I mean. I mean I'm worried about you. The stress that I triggered you. Pushed you into something you didn't want. Did something that caused you to backslide in whatever progress you'd made. I'm not worried about whatever the equivalent of pussy blue balls is, which is non-existent, you know.
Kara looks at the tall federal officer who has hunched himself over, trying to protect himself.
Hey, I know. I'm a doctor.
That gets a smile from him.
You're wonderful.
He glances up at her.
But
he clears his throat. No, wait. Kara raises a hand. I assume you haven't been having much sex since things changed?
He shakes his head.
None. But I know that you can. He shrugs, and a slight blush fills his cheeks. Hey, I know. I'm a doctor. Again, he smiles with an audible chuckle this time. We have chemistry. God knows Bedford doesn't have many options, so if you're willing to try, I'm willing. She looks at him with those dark pools that express so much emotion.
What were you thinking?
Sam hesitantly asks. She leaves him standing there, goes and draws the curtains, pulls the bed covers down, turns off all the lights in the room except the bathroom light, steps into the bathroom and comes out in a terry bathrobe, slips into the bed, and pulls the covers up. She calls him over.
Styles, your turn.
She holds up the bathrobe. Sam nods as he takes it and goes to the bathroom. He takes off his clothes, walks over to the other side of the bed. He sees that she is facing the other way. Not looking, protecting his privacy, and he feels his heart about to explode. He slides in under the covers. They are cool against his skin. He stretches out. He can feel Kara waiting. He breathes out deeply. He's so grateful for the space she's giving him. He turns towards her and scooches until his body meets hers. He pulls her ass up against his groin and starts to lick her neck and ear and shoulder area. He lets his right hand wander under her belly until it dips into her mound, and then further, until he finds her clit. He lightly fingers around it at first, as he starts to push softly against her ass. His long fingers open her folds and find the eager nub. They flick back and forth. He lets his fingers run further down to her vaginal opening and dip in quickly to absorb some wetness. He whispers in her ear,
I love how wet you feel.
Takes the finger out and runs it back out and up towards her clitoris.
I can't wait to feel all that heat with my dick.
He grinds against her so she can feel how hard he is and is rewarded with a gush of more wetness. Sam licks her ear as he continues to use her fluids to slide his fingers vigorously over her clitoris and make her come for the first time that night. In the throes of passion, she pushes against him and opens her legs, but Sam pulls back.
I haven't put protection on yet.
She groans and he chuckles. She feels his big hand on the inside of her knee, trying to straighten out her legs or position her for missionary. Kara's not entirely sure, but she's calm and waits. She feels him kneel between her legs. Missionary, then.
She spreads her legs, feels his hands come underneath her ass, and pulls her down as he crouches and brings his torso down to the bed until his chin meets with her pubic bone. He laughs and adjusts his position. His tongue swipes the entirety of her sex, her messy, hot, wet, cum-filled sex.
"Don't you want to fuck me?"
she asks breathlessly.
"Oh, I will, but I like my pussy wet and hot, so gotta make sure it is first."
With that, he digs right back in, his tongue going erect and punching into her like a mini cock, then becoming a broad mop that flattens every sensation of life out of her except pleasure. She feels herself going rigid, and his muffled voice,
"Relax, I got you."
While his big hands run up and down her thighs, then stop at her hips, digging in and pulling her deeper into his mouth. He isn't doing a perfunctory lick for a minute to checkmark foreplay off some imaginary list. He is giving head. She understands the term now, and she plays with the top of his head, pulling at the hair on it. She sighs, a deep belly sigh, and her legs go jelly-like. Her spine feels boneless as well, and she is melting into the mattress. The only thing that isn't is her vulva and clitoris that are growing and raising themselves, seeking out more and more of this man's mouth and tongue and little nips and deep probes and excess saliva and hunger. He hungers for her and is relishing her and is delicate and powerful in how he digs deeper. His fingers, she doesn't even remember when he brought them back, now sink into her like rocks into lakes immediately, sinking heavily, leaving ripples that form perfect circles that extend and touch other parts of her like beautiful art. But underneath, the rock continues sinking and looking for the bottom. Her back arches. The rock finds the bottom of the lake, the tip of his finger playing with a soft, spongy, walnut-like spot inside of her. And now, the ripples are not delicate art-like. They are strong, cascading spurts of emotion turned into physical liquid expression that bursts out of her. She grabs his hair, even the tip of an ear. He presses her body against his face, keeps him there, grinds and trembles, and she is the ripple and the echo, and she pulls him by the hair and feels him incredibly get even closer. His nose, his mouth, his tongue, his cheek, her body devours them. She is eating him. She giggles at the thought. And then another wave, the largest one yet, hits her, and she can't think anymore. She's gone.
"Ah, fuck. You're such a talented slut. Make me come again."
The order almost takes Sam out. Thankfully, her body is already in the midst of it, and all he needs to do is finger her clit a bit and make sure the pressure is continuous while the orgasm comes down. He shakes his head, trying to pinpoint what went wrong. It was the word. Lucifer used to always call him that. She surely didn't mean anything by it. People lose inhibitions and swear during sex. She has already been super kind. He isn't going to throw more trauma complaints at her. He sits back onto his heels, presses a hand on her pubic bone.
"You okay?"
He can feel her still trembling.
"Do you want water or something?"
He lowers his hand until the middle finger lightly brushes her clit.
"More?"
he asks huskily. She snaps her legs closed. "No, I'd pass out."
"Hey, it's a choice," he teases, "eaten out until unconscious."
"I know my pussy is wet and hot and ready to get fucked. So why don't you get that condom I put in the pocket of the robe and show me if you are as good as I remember?" "That's my choice, agent."
Kara lifts her leg and puts it on his chest. Sam grabs her foot and massages her arch. He kisses it lightly, a shudder running up his back.
"Yeah, sounds good."
He lowers her leg, moves back to his side of the bed, and rummages in the dark for the condom in the discarded robe on the floor. He finds it, tears the corner off, and slides the condom slightly up, but doesn't take it out. He isn't ready. He is sitting against the headboard, trying to think of a way to approach this new hurdle without making her feel like it's a problem he expects her to fix, and at the same time berating himself and remembering why he doesn't do fucking hookups
and wondering how the hell Dean does this so easily, and trying to not spiral and thanking his lucky stars that the room is dark. What a mess. He strokes his dick half-heartedly. The massive jerk flops sideways. Fuck. He's gonna have to tell her. Suddenly, she's there, straddling him. Her hands grab his cock, and she knows. Sam breathes deeply. He is thinking of what to say, but she speaks first. You have a pretty mouth. I remember how distracting it was last time, and I didn't even know what a greedy little service whore mouth it was. She slides up his lap, pressing herself against him and pulls on his hair. Sam can't help himself. He whines. His brain short circuits between wanting to pull her in closer and wanting to fling her off and run away. She slides again and again, and he finds his hands holding onto her hips to propel her harder up and down the length of his lap and his member that she has placed under her slit and is being jacked off by her body, her warm, wet body that his dick is starting to respond to. Kara holds onto his shoulders as she continues to swing back and forth, and her nails are really digging in, which he likes. She nuzzles his neck, and a sudden bite makes him shout out in surprise. Really? Bitching about a bite? Her hand lets go of his shoulder and drops in between their bodies and grabs his cock, her nails raking from the balls to the tip where she gives it a squeeze. Just this side of uncomfortable. Sam has sat up as tall as he can and is plastered upright against the headboard. He's breathing deeply. But this fella says you like it. She squeezes again. Don't ya? Sam is nodding, but she can't see because they're in the dark. She slaps his dick. Don't ya? She grabs the base of his dick. It's all nice and big now. You like it?
Yes. Sorry, yes.
Sam punches out. His brain and his body are not on the same wavelength right now. He feels her squat and holds it firmly while she introduces it into her body. She sits on him, swallows his cock whole. He gasps.
I didn't put on.
Her fingers are covering his mouth as she slides back and forth roughly and rapidly on his lap. Shh, don't worry. She grunts as she works herself up on his body. Sam remembers they didn't use anything the first time either, and she feels divine, and it has been too long since he has had the opportunity to feel free for quite a while. He lets out a guttural sound, grabs her by the ass, and brings his legs up, creating a natural chair for her. He grinds her down into him and bites her shoulder. When she responds favorably, he lets go. There is no more timidness, holding back, thinking ahead or trauma controlling his responses, at least for the next few minutes while he pours his sweat, energy, and eventually semen into Dr. Roberts. When he does come, he leans his head back against the headboard and a dry laugh escapes his throat.
Holy hell, I needed that. You okay?
His hands stroll over the back of her head and down her spine as she lays slumped over his shoulder. Yes. That's what Master thought, too. Kara says, but the voice doesn't sound like her. Immediately, the hairs on the back of his neck prickle, and Sam feels his skin goosebump and his stomach plummet. He stretches his arm out to the nightstand and turns on the lamp.
Kara, are you doing well?
I am doing well, aren't I? Kara replies. She straightens up, shakes her hair, and pins Sam by the shoulder against the bedpost. You thought I did well, right? She slithers up against his chest.
Yeah, Kara.
Oh, come on, Sammy. Don't act stupid. You know better than that.
You're a demon.
Bingo. Kara Demon lightly rakes her nails down Sam's chest.
Were you a demon the whole time we were talking?
Sam asks, feeling betrayed. Nah, I was in the background. I thought she could bring it home and had the power to close the deal. And our girl did. But boy, Sam, you certainly do play hard to get. Hot and cold, Boss will be delighted that you are so faithful. I did have to step in a few times when she would have given up, but we persevered. It was fun watching you fumble your way through flirting, though. Of course, I stepped in for one of the orgasms. Can't do all the work and not reap some of the rewards. The demon says, and Sam knows exactly when that was. He looks at this Kara, who is so recognizable, and yet not.
I don't understand. What do you want?
Why possess her? Sam asks meekly, almost afraid to know the answer. Come on, you know, don't you? The demon Kara straddles him closer, whispering in his ear. It's not midnight yet, so happy Valentine's, baby.
I don't want this. I reject this gift.
Sam pushes Kara's body back away from his body, delicately but firmly. Funny, Winchester. With your cum running down her thigh? That's not rejection. Too late.
Why did you do this?
Sam seems perplexed. Thing is, this gift can suffer. It can fall downstairs. It can wander into unsavory parts of the neighborhood. It can take too many medicines. It can write pathetic notes on how it hates its pathetic life and then lose control of a blade over its wrist. I don't know, Sam. So many things can happen to this gift. Instead, it spends a wonderful evening with you. I think it's lucky.
Get off me.
Sam grabs Kara's arms and is trying to stand up.
I'm going to exorcise you.
The demon interrupts. I was actually on my way out. Have to report to the boss before midnight. Thanks for the lovely time. Then they smoke out of Kara's body. Sam pushes Kara off his lap and heads quickly to the bathroom. In the bathroom, he turns on the shower, but before he pulls out his phone, he sighs. Dina's texted him 6 times. He scrolls through them and smiles when he sees that his brother asked and gave himself permission to use the Find My Friends GPS locator, saw he was in the hotel, and assumed he had gone for it with Stacy with an I. He texts Dean quickly.
Did hook up. Not Stacy. Ended up being a gift. Come get me, please. Room 823. Be ready in 5.
He hops in the shower and scrubs his face in his groin area and gets out. He'd shower properly back at the bunker. He leaves the safety of the bathroom. Kara is sitting at the desk area in her bathrobe. The room is still dimly lit, only the lamp he had turned on and the lamp at the desk are on.
Hey, are you okay? Sorry I ran off like that at the end. I'm still working through stuff.
Sam shuffles his feet. Honestly, I didn't even notice. I was a bit loopy post-sex. She waves her hand. Sam bites his lip, understanding more than she knows. There's a knock at the door.
That's my partner. Let me tell him I'll be right out.
Sam goes to the door, opens it a crack.
Hey, give me a minute to say goodbye. Is there anything that needs to be handled?
Dean asks. Sam shakes his head. He walks back in and goes to the desk where Kara is sitting. He uses the hotel notepad and pen and writes down the phone number for the bunker.
I don't know if you still have my card, but this is the number for the headquarters I report to. We weren't,
He looks up at her trying to gauge if she knows or if it was the demon.
We weren't safe.
She blushes and gives a quick nod. Sam feels a bit of relief. No, a lot of relief. He fucked her, not a demon.
So, if anything comes up, let me know. I haven't had sex in a couple years, so should be clean, but still.
Sam turns to leave. Agent Stiles?
Yeah.
Sam stops and looks at her. I had fun. Maybe we shouldn't wait 5 years and a random encounter to do this again. She's looking at him with those chocolate eyes that are on fire again. He can feel it in his belly. Sam walks back to the table, puts 2 fingers under her chin, and raises her face to his. He lowers his head and their lips meet. Sweet, firm, possessive. Kiss deepens quickly. His other hand slides behind her and holds her still while his tongue probes forward, exploring a seeker. Three hard knocks on the door makes them both jump.
Sammy.
A muffled voice from the hallway.
I better go before he breaks down the doorway.
Sam gives her a quick peck and turns and strides out of the room. Behind him, Kara Roberts' eyes go all black.